activated, fascinated by the macabre. I never know the how to say that word.
Hello, I'm Akshi.
And I'm Shayna, and you're listening to Unpacking the Eerie. Over the course of our friendship, we quickly learned that we had very specific overlapping interests in true crime, the occult,
conspiracy theories, and other unknowns, and also
intergenerational and historical trauma,
social, racial, gender, and economic justice, psychology, humor,
and obviously lots of podcasts. After many conversations, we thought the intersections of all of these things would be prime content for a podcast we've always wanted but have never found. This is that podcast.
Before we start, we wanted to offer a content warning. This episode will contain mentions of graphic violence and mental illness.
How are you doing today, Akshi?
I'm doing okay. There's a lot of smoke in Seattle right now. It's not great.
It is not great.
We're the second worst air quality city in the world right now.
Yeah,
first is Portland, and Delhi is number 5.
Well, yeah, that's not great. I lived in San Francisco for the past 9 years before I lived here, and it was also a site of the worst air quality in the world a couple years ago, so just jumping from bad air to bad air. I really didn't think I was going to deal with this
either. I had no idea that stuff like this happened in Washington as well.
Well, climate change.
It's supposed to rain this weekend, so hopefully it makes the smoke go away. I don't know if that's actually a thing, but I'm hoping that it is.
We can hope. We can hope that the wind that brings in the clouds pushes out the air.
Yeah.
The smoke.
Yeah.
I don't know how that works either. Okay. So before we get started, we wanted to first check in and just like acknowledge that when we're talking about social justice issues, we're not going to get everything right all the time. And there's going to be key things that we miss because we're humans and humans make mistakes. And also, just by virtue of the identities we don't have, we're going to be missing some key things. So if you're so inclined and you'd like to offer us feedback, we so graciously welcome it. And you can email us at unpackingtheeerie@gmail.com.
Yeah, and we will do our best to publicly respond to people's feedback in future episodes.
Yes. Also, we can see what cities people are listening in from. And there's some people from Anchorage, Alaska, from Happy Valley, Oregon, from where else?
Lewistown Orchards, Idaho.
Yes, and then Tullahoma, Tennessee. And we don't, to our knowledge, we don't know people who are there. And there's been listens for every episode. So we just wanted to say, hey.
Hey,
thanks
for listening. Thanks for
supporting.
How'd
you find us? I want to know.
Yeah,
let us
know. You should email us or like DM us on Instagram.
You can find us on Instagram at Unpacking the Eerie. Get on there.
Get on there. We post some fun pictures. And for this episode, there will definitely be some fun pictures. Maybe fun is the wrong word.
That's what I was thinking.
We post pictures that are relevant to the stories. On our Instagram, so it'll be fun for y'all to see that.
Okay, so today we're going to be talking about a pretty recent story of when, you know, online urban legends become real life horror. So buckle up.
I'm buckled.
So on May 31st, 2014, in Waukesha, Wisconsin, two 12-year-old girls, Morgan and Anissa, lure their friend, Peyton, who's also 12, into the woods for what they said was going to be a game of hide-and-seek. Morgan pulls out a kitchen knife and tries to hand it to Anissa, which prompts a back-and-forth with the weapon. Finally, Morgan ends up with the knife and waits for Anissa to prompt her. Anissa says, "Go ballistic, go crazy, put her down." And then Morgan, before she goes for it, says, "Don't be afraid. I'm only a little kitty cat." And then says, "I'm so sorry." And then she jumps on her friend, Peyton, and stabs her repeatedly. They then leave Peyton in the woods after having stabbed her 19 times in the arms, legs, and torso. Morgan and Anissa walk 5 miles before they're found and turn themselves into the police. So, some wild-ass shit is happening.
That's some wild-ass shit for 12-year-olds with these, to get up to.
Yes. I remember the first
time. I mean, it's wild-ass shit for anyone to get up to, but especially 12-year-olds, I think.
Yeah. I remember when this happened and I read the article about it, I was like, what the fuck? But I never went deep into it, so I'm really excited. Excited's not the right word.
We're very weird in terms of the terminology we use because I think we consume a lot of this kind of material, and we're fascinated by it. So we say things like, ooh, fun pictures. I'm excited to talk about this.
Cool story.
Yeah.
You know, I think there isn't a word that describes the feeling we feel.
Maybe. Yeah, maybe there isn't a word in English, but maybe there's a word in a different language.
Wow, if anyone knows this, a word to describe this feeling of getting very
activated, fascinated by the macabre. I never know how to say that word. Let us know.
Yes, let us know. anyways. I was really interested to come back to this story and learn more about it because I was like, what the fuck? During the interrogation, they said they tried to kill Peyton in the name of Slender Man. Akshi, what the fuck is Slender Man?
Okay, so I'm going to go into it. Some of you may already know, but some of you may have no idea about the legend of Slender Man. So I'm going to enlighten us all. So Slender Man is a paranormal figure that has purported to be in existence for centuries, covering a large geographic area. Believers in Slender Man tie his appearance with other legends around the world that I'm going to go into. But first I'm going to go into his appearance. He's a being or an entity who's male in appearance. He appears to have 4 to 8 long black tentacles that come out of his back. And in some photos, the tentacles aren't present, so it's theorized that he can also contract them at will. He's described to be wearing a black suit similar to that of the Men in Black. And he also appears to be very thin and is able to stretch his limbs and torso to inhuman lengths in order to catch his prey. So he looks really tall. When his arms are outstretched, his victims are put into a trance where they're helpless to stop themselves from walking into his arms. His face is pale and ghostly and appears to be wrapped in gauze or cloth, so you can't really see his facial features at all. It looks like he has a blank face. His facial features are up for debate, as some people believe that his face looks different to each person if they see a face at all. In some portrayals, he wears a hat which looks similar to a bowler or a fedora or a top hat, which kind of reminds me of that tall man from Haunting in Hill House.
I wonder if it was inspired by that.
Yeah. He often keeps his hands crossed behind his back or hanging loosely at his sides. His black suit is sometimes pinstripe, and he wears long dress shoes, which are always shined a perfect gleaming black. So that's a little bit about what Slender Man looks like. He's rumored to kill children almost exclusively, although it's difficult to say whether or not his objective is slaughter or murder, because it's unknown what he actually does with his victims. He's theorized to kill them, but he's also theorized to take them somewhere else, an unknown location, or even another dimension. The reason for these unknowns is because there are never any bodies or evidence left behind for people to figure out what happened. It's reported he can be found in sections of the woods in suburban areas. He's also been spotted with large groups of children, as many photographs portray. It's also thought that he resides in the woods, preys on children, and is unconcerned of being exposed to daylight or being captured in photos. It's also thought that he enjoys stalking people who become paranoid about his existence. So he likes to stalk people in particular who are very frightened of him to make them even more frightened of him. He'll give them small glimpses of himself to scare them even more. And clearly, he likes to psychologically torture his victims that way. He is said to float rather than walk. His main intention seemed to be to kidnap children, as they are said to disappear shortly after he's seen near them in photographs. So here are some historical references to Slenderman from different cultures. Earliest reference to the legend can be found in Brazilian cave paintings. So there are cave paintings found near the Serra da Capivara National Park in northeastern Brazil. These paintings date back to 9000 BC and show a strangely elongated character leading a child by hand. Honestly, the legend reminds me a little bit of like creepy Pied Piper, you know? Since Pied Piper, like, lures the children out of the town. That's what I was thinking about when I was reading.
That's interesting because I was thinking about, I feel like his description is very much in line with what people describe in their sleep paralysis dreams. Like, I don't know why, but there's, like, so many people who report seeing the same very tall, slender, dark figure that appears to be a man just kind of looming over them and they can't move.
I didn't know that was a common sleep paralysis.
Yeah. So I was in a psych class where someone had shared that they experienced that. And then I was talking to a friend, separate occasion, who also said that they experienced that. So I looked up online. I was like, is this common? And there's just like so many accounts of people who said that during, apparently, it's just, like, a common thing that people visualize when they're in, like, sleep paralysis, which is fucking terrifying. Could you imagine just, like, not being able to move?
Terrifying. And
this, like, looming
figure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because I've had sleep paralysis before, but I usually don't see stuff. And when I do, it's different. But save for another episode. Very interesting. So another reference of Slenderman comes from Egyptian hieroglyphs. That's the next known reference, which comes from around 3100 BC in Egypt. Hieroglyphic carvings represent someone known as the Thief of Cook or Thief of Gods. Were found in the tomb of Pharaoh Wasner, who was rumored to have an experience with the entity. The carving resembles a figure with multiple upper limbs. So then another reference is from 16th century Germany. So a German woodcutter named Hans Freckenberg created at least two woodcuts that featured a character that was multi-limbed and skeletal. Many believe he was trying to represent Der Grossmann, aka the tall man, who's a fairy that lives in the Black Forest, and he would chase bad children who crept into the woods at night and wouldn't leave them alone until he caught them or told their parents of their wrongdoing.
Okay. That sounds like a lot of parents being like, let's all tell our kids this so that they don't fuck up.
Yep. It seems like the legends that have characters similar to Slenderman are very much like those kind of tales, you know? Because there's also a Romanian fairy tale that has reference to the tall man, and this is a description. The tall man stood in a clearing, dressed as a nobleman, all in black. Shadows lay over him, dark as cloudy midnight. He had many arms, all long and boneless as snakes, all sharp as swords, and they writhed like worms on nails. He did not speak, but made his intentions known. In the fairy tale, the tall man causes a mother to kill her husband and child before he slid from a fireplace and clenched her in his burning embrace. So, That's a fun fairy tale from Romania.
Yeah, man, fairy tales aren't...
They're scary.
They're dark.
Yeah, they're pretty dark. Most of Grimm's fairy tales and also original Hans Christian Andersen are also pretty...
Pretty grim?
good one. Yes. Good one. Another reference to him is from the British Isles of this character, or from Scotland, from this character called Fear Dub, which means the black man. And it's about an entity that haunts trails and forests at night, has connections to the devil, but its characteristics are also similar to that of Slender Man. It's another thing that was used to scare small children.
They're trying to small scare children.
Slender Man's trying to small scare children. Not a big scare, a small scare.
Small scare.
But yeah, it was a story that was used to scare small children to stay indoors and not go into the woods by themselves. And then lastly, this is, I feel like it's not a reference, but it was something that I found when I was doing research that, and people compare Slender Man to this Japanese legend called Noperbo, or Zumberabo, which is a faceless ghost.
Can I see how it's spelled?
Nopper-bo, or Zumbera-bo.
I've never heard of any of those things.
It's a faceless ghost. It's a Japanese legend of a faceless ghost, and okay. This entity is described as deeply terrifying and takes delight in scaring humans. So just shifting a little bit, I'm going to be talking a little bit about what it is to be a proxy for Slender Man, because that's what it seems like these girls were trying to do. So a proxy is a term that's given to those who serve the Slender Man. These are people who are under the influence or control of the Slender Man, and they act based on the wants and needs of Slender Man. It's suspected that proxies do the actual physical work of the Slender Man, such as creating and manipulating objects, destroying and leaving evidence, creating videos, and sometimes responding on Twitter.
Okay.
And influencing victims as needed. They don't gain any unnatural powers, but they do adapt separate personalities altogether while they are in this proxy state. And these personalities are described as sadistic, completely emotionless, and pretty negative compared to what their original personality was prior to them being in this proxy state.
Hmm.
Proxies worship Slender Man while they're under his control. And there's also like a system of ranks in terms of proxies. So I'm going to list out what these levels are, but there's basically 5 different ranks of being a Slender Man proxy. The first one, they're called the Hallowed, and they are mindless puppets created for the harassment of runners. And runners are people who are being stalked by the Slender Man. The second level, they're called the Berserkers, and they are under his control but can act on their own when he's not actively controlling them. It's said that they're much more dangerous than the Hallowed because they can make people trust them to further Slender Man's agenda and are not just like mindless puppets. They often think that they are agents, but they actually aren't. And I will tell you about agents in a little bit. So the third level, they're called the Sleepers, and they are those who are under his control but are unaware that they are under the control of Slender Man. Runners can come under his control when their mind is at their weakest, so when they're asleep or when they're blackout, or different stages like that. He uses sleepers to attack other runners, and they are more dangerous than the previous level, which is berserkers, because they are unaware that they're under his control and think that they're acting under their free will. Agents is the next level, and those are people who act for him without being under his control. So they basically are choosing to act for him without being, like, hypnotized by him. One of their benefits is that they have control of all their mental faculties, which means that they can be much more creative in the ways that they target Slenderman's victims and target runners. They're kind of equivalent to, like, cultists who, like, worship whoever the cult is led by. They can choose to do whatever they want, but what they're choosing to do is act for Slender Man. And then the top level, they're called Revenants, and they're actually people who have returned from the dead and are using human vessels to stay alive. And these are the only proxies that actually have supernatural powers to act for Slender Man. So those are the five different versions of proxies for Slender Man. And most of them are unaware of the fact that they are proxies, as their memories are supposedly suppressed by Slender Man. And those who do find out that they are proxies are shocked and horrified to learn what they did while they were under his control. So that's a little bit of info about Slender Man's legend and, like, how to be a proxy for Slender Man. And this whole time I've been talking as though this is a real story, when in fact all of what I just said is fiction created by several people across the internet. Because Slender Man is actually a creepypasta. Ba-bam! Ba-bam! Do you know what a creepypasta is, Shayna?
Well, I mean, I know that it's a website people go to for creepy stories, but that was the extent to which I knew about it.
Yes, you're right that there is a website called creepypasta.com, but creepypastas existed prior to that website. So they're basically urban legends for the internet age. They're horror stories that are copy-pasted across the internet. So the term creepypasta comes from another internet term, which is called copypasta. And copypastas are, like, non-creepy stories that are, like, copy-pasted across the internet, which is why they're called, maybe it's copypasta. I don't know. I'm going to call it creepypasta, because that's what I've always called it. They're often made to seem like they're real stories, like blog posts or kind of like email threads, which makes them even creepier. Some famous ones that I've read are Abandoned by Disney, which is about a man exploring an abandoned Disneyland resort. There's also Ted the Caver, which is another good one that I've read, which is about this person who's exploring creepy caves near his house. You can find them anywhere on the internet, but some famous places to find them are the Reddit thread R No Sleep, Creepypasta website, as Shayna mentioned, 4chan Paranormal Board, and other places. The genre had its peak in 2010 when it was covered in a New York Times article. Slender Man is one of the most famous creepypastas. He's a fictional supernatural character that started on a forum called Something Awful by user Eric Knudsen. Something Awful is like a humor site forum, kind of like 4chan, I guess. So in June of 2009, a new forum thread asked Something Awful users to create paranormal images through using Photoshop. So a user with the name Victor Surge, who was actually Eric Knudsen, posted a photo on this thread of two children haunted by a tall, shadowy figure that had tentacles for arms. It came along with text that read, "We didn't want to go, we didn't want to kill them, but its persistent silence and outstretched arms horrified and comforted us at the same time." 1983, photographer unknown, presumed dead. So Surge continued Surge/Eric Knudsen continued posting Photoshopped pictures, newspaper clipping, and children's drawings of Slender Man, kind of building upon this first photo that he posted, building upon the myth. And so other users started joining in on the myth, contributing their own doctored photos, their own drawings, and drawing parallels to either existing legends or legends that they have made up. The thread eventually was solely devoted to developing the myth of Slender Man, and there is so much like content that people across the internet have like contributed to the urban legend of Slender Man that it's estimated that there's about 194 pages of content solely dedicated to Slender Man, all of which is fictional.
People are really into Slender Man.
Yeah, people were really into it. I mean, if you look at the photos, I've seen some of them, and they're very eerie and like
they are eerie.
A great starting point for a lot of stories.
For sure. I also saw some YouTube videos that, I mean, they're very Blair Witch Project style, running around, usually by children, and they're is like a Slender Man looking character that kind of flashes into the screen, and I think like from the average onlooker who might be a child, it looks very real because you would assume that the children who posted this wouldn't have the skills to Photoshop it in. It looks like I could see how a child would be like, that's fucking real and scary.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know there's also like a Slender Man VR game that came out at some point. The photos look very real, and you know, it's 2020 and people can make things look really good. I guess even in 2009, people could make black and white photos look pretty real.
Yeah.
So I think a lot of people wonder why this internet urban legend, as opposed to other ones, became so viral and so many people contributed to it. And folklorist and media scholar Andrew Peck attributes the success of Slender Man to the collaborative nature in which the legend was created. It was so easily adaptable by users because the story is so shrouded in mystery. Although most users understand that Slender Man isn't real, they suspend their disbelief to participate in the legend either while listening or retelling the story. And this kind of adds a sense of authenticity to the stories and blurs the lines between legend and reality. So speaking of the blur of the lines between like what's real and what's not, this kind of reminded me of this like concept of the uncanny and the concept of Uncanny Valley. Do you know what that is?
I've not heard of Uncanny
Valley. Oh, cool.
Yeah.
So when something feels uncanny, it's basically something that feels both familiar yet unfamiliar. And the uncanny valley is the space that falls between something that feels both familiar yet unfamiliar. It's when something seems almost human, but not quite enough. Think about like how you feel when you watch movies that are about like AI or robots or like Black Mirror, and how you get kind of this like uncomfortable feeling because like it feels real, but you know that it's not, and there's something off about it. It was first identified as a concept in 1970 by Masahiro Mori, a robotics researcher at the Tokyo Institute of Technology. He proposed that responses to a human-like robot would shift from empathy to revulsion as the machine failed to meet innate expectations of how a real human looks and behaves. And this line of reasoning was added to in 2016 when a research study was conducted on this, and they asked volunteers to rate 80 selected robot faces, and they found that the uncanny valley was in full effect, not only in purely aesthetic terms, but also in psychological ones. They said that robot faces triggered an uncanny reaction were also more likely to be categorized as untrustworthy. So there's like this middle ground between something looking fake and something looking real that our brains really don't like. And like it marks it as like something to be feared and endangered. So like toys and cartoons don't unnerve us because they're like too far on the like not real edge. But as we get closer to humans, so like think about like dolls, there is a dip where people start to have more negative reactions. And psychologically, this is caused by a disconnect in our mind because the subtle differences that make this thing seem unfamiliar triggers our brain to tell us something's wrong. So ways in which people, the uncanny is used a lot by people who are trying to create horror material.
Yeah.
So like things like removing facial features from a character is a common way that people like trigger that uncanny reaction and elicit fear. I feel like creepypastas do the same thing where, you know, you're reading these stories and it's really easy to like somehow think that they're real if you are not aware of the context. Mm-hmm. Like, for example, a friend of mine sent me this thread on No Sleep once that was called, "I'm a search and rescue officer for the U.S. Forest Service." And it had all these really creepy stories about how this person was just finding random staircases in the middle of like forests and national parks. And I was like so creeped out by it. And I was like, I can't believe this is real. Like, oh my God. And then I'm texting my friend about it being like, I can't believe this is real. And he was like, it's not. It's on No Sleep, which is like fiction stories. And then with the context, I was like, okay, wow. So I totally understand why someone would think these stories are real if they don't have the context of what creepypastas or, like, you know, things like that are. And even if you do, like, especially if you're a kid, I feel like it's easy for those lines to be really blurred. And, you know, I feel like Slender Man is a perfect example of the uncanny because he looks human and he has human clothes, but his proportions are, like, way off and he has, like, this blank face. And, you know, it's just like a really great representation of the uncanny and like it triggers this like fear response because it's like kind of familiar, but also not. So just kind of bringing it back to the original story that Shayna mentioned in the beginning, the creator of Slender Man, the original creator, Eric Knudsen, he's commented that despite understanding that Slender Man was created on Something Awful forums, there are people who still entertain the possibility that he could be real.
Damn, Akshi, that was super interesting. Thank you for sharing that.
It was very interesting for me to also,
like, make that connection.
Yeah, yeah.
You had me thinking about, I was looking into phobias once. Mm-hmm. I can't remember now at this point if I learned about it in Abnormal Psych in undergrad or if I read it somewhere, but I was reading about phobias and that they say something similar about why so many people are afraid of clowns because it triggers something in our brain to say danger because they're always smiling. That's not normal.
Oh my God. That totally makes
like their faces
sense.
Don't move.
Yeah.
And that's not normal. It's also akin to what we see when people are dead. Their faces mm-hmm. don't move. And so like, that's what that reminded me of is like, something's wrong here. And your brain's like, no.
What is that? I just wonder what that is like evolution in terms of evolution, like how that developed. Like, I wonder if there were like creatures that existed at some point that were like of
aliens
that like aliens. Looked like humans but were actually not and were like a danger at some point. Yeah, I'm curious as to the evolutionary aspect of
why internalized in us.
Yeah, like why do we fear things that are similar to us but like just like very subtly off.
Yeah. Okay. So, we're gonna go back to the stabbing that just happened, and we're gonna take it from the top. We're gonna look at these girls' childhoods real quick. There's a documentary called Beware the Slender Man. It's an HBO documentary, and so a lot of what I'm sharing is pulled, if not all of it, at least this beginning part is pulled from that documentary. And so I think a common question people have is just like, were there any signs when they were kids? And the parents suggest that there were no signs, that they couldn't have seen this coming. They seem really confused. And honestly, like, when you watch the interviews, you can kind of see them, like, I don't know. You can see it in their eyes, the way they're trying to search, like, scrounge through memories and try to see anywhere that they could have gotten any glimpse of abnormal behavior, and they couldn't do it. I think also they were really wanting to humanize their children, especially after the way that the media talked about them as, like, these psychopathic, sadistic, you know, killer children.
Right.
So for Anissa, this was, so their names are Anissa and Morgan. For Anissa, her dad reflects back on happier childhood memories. He talks about, you know, ordinary stories from childhood, happy about getting a dollar from the tooth fairy. He shows a video from her sixth grade choir. He said that he saw absolutely no signs of strange behavior from Anissa, that he was always checking on her. I guess in their house, he was like, you know, the doors were always open in our house, you know, except for, you know, when we were about to get ready for bed, if we had to change, or if we, you know, if it was bath time, like, doors were closed during, you know, times that were to yourself. Other times, all doors were open. And he said that he was always checking in on his daughter to see that things were cool. And so he just, he kept repeating this, kind of just confused. And they interviewed other people in Anissa's life as well. They interviewed a childhood friend who Anissa shared that she was well-liked, that she had a great time in school, that she, you know, had a lot of friends. And interestingly, like, her teacher, though, shared another reality. She said that she didn't really have connections with other students, that she would regularly cry about not having friends, sometimes in front of class, and she was made fun of for that.
This was Anissa.
This is Anissa. So clearly Anissa's, like, revealing different parts of herself to different people in her life. And so it's just interesting to kind of see parallel all of these different ways people interpreted the experience that she was having, I don't know, as an adolescent girl, in and out of school. And I guess what was known, though, by everybody was that she often escaped into the internet. And a psychologist on the documentary noted that in the absence of friendships, internet can serve as a peer for adolescents who are looking for some way to fit in.
I mean, I definitely used the internet as my peer when I was in middle school.
Yeah.
And high school. Tumblr.
Tumblr. Holy shit. I was on the Tumblr as well.
Yeah. I even made friends with some people on Tumblr who I'd never met before in real life. So.
Me too. Yeah.
Totally a thing.
Totally a thing. So all of these things, arguably normal. And, like, you know, all of these things aren't indicators of anything that unraveled in the next whatever years where they should try to kill somebody.
Right.
The documentary then switches to Morgan, who, you know, at the beginning of the interview, her mother is reflecting fondly on nice memories of her daughter. They showed home tapes of her playing with pets, playing music. She said that she moved to the beat of her own drum, that she was an individual, that she was highly creative and imaginative. She did note, however, though, that Morgan believed in Santa till she was about 11. And her mom kind of liked that she kept that magic alive for herself for so long. She didn't think it was abnormal, so she just didn't, you know, contest it. She said that Morgan had a lot of imaginary friends. Again, like, these things could be just, like, normal kid things, not necessarily indicative of anything more serious. And then she knew she was interested in Slender Man, her mom said, but that she didn't really think back on it because she was like, when I was a kid, I was, you know, reading It. You know, I was riding down the street on my bike with my It by Stephen King book under her belt. And she was like, it was normal to me.
Yeah, so, me too.
Yeah.
I was always reading Goosebumps. And I think I watched some really, I watched The Exorcist when I was like 10.
Yeah. So, you know, I was listening to all of this and I was like, yeah, all that checks out for me. Me too. But also it got me thinking like, man, was there ever a point in my childhood I was so impressionable that I would be led to believe all the things that they end up believing about Slender Man? And that made me feel kind of weird.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Just marinate on that for a sec. Okay. And so here's where Peyton comes in. I'm going to insert Peyton's background. Peyton and Morgan were friends first, before Anissa. Anissa moved to the school in middle school, Peyton and Morgan. Peyton was also known as Bella, so they use these names interchangeably because I guess there was another Peyton at school, so they called her Bella. Anyway, Peyton and Morgan became friends in the fourth grade, and they became very close. Peyton says in one of the interviews, she said that she befriended her when she saw that Morgan didn't have any friends.
Aww.
Yeah. So this makes me very sad.
Yeah.
And Peyton described Morgan as lonely, controlling sometimes, but she just went with it. So I guess comparing the two girls' stories, Anissa and Morgan, you're seeing, like, they both felt isolated. It seemed like they both wanted, like, some kind of belonging. That they were lonely. Whatever. So it makes sense that they bonded. In sixth grade, Anissa enrolls in the same school, and they quickly bond and share, and Anissa shares her obsession with Creepypasta Wiki.
Whee!
And more specifically, Slender Man. And Peyton said that Peyton was like, Morgan liked it, and thought it was real, but I went along with it. I was supportive because I thought that's what she liked.
Aww.
Which also made me sad.
I did the same stuff in middle school. That reminds me, one time we had to do these, like, not had to. We made these, like, quizzes about each other, like friend quizzes. And I remember on one of the quizzes, I put that my favorite band was Green Day because I knew that all my friends really like Green Day. And I like Green Day, but it wasn't, like, my favorite band. And then I remember when my friends did the quiz, they were like, your favorite band isn't Green Day. You're lying. You just put that there because we like Green Day. And I was like, I've been caught.
Oh, my God. So dramatic. I just imagine, like, everything slowed down and the camera goes and closes up on your face, and the music changes, and the lights dim, and Akshi was found.
Yep.
She was a liar, and a cheat, and a phony. She didn't like Green Day.
Oh, man. Yep. That's definitely how it felt, but I understand, you know, going along with things.
Yeah.
Your friends like them.
Yeah.
It's not like you don't like them, you just don't get it yet, and you're, like, on the path to getting it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, man, Peyton was a supportive friend.
Yeah. Oh, man.
Oh, man. Yeah. So, but Peyton also shared that Anissa was always pretty cruel to her. She felt Anissa was jealous of the friendship she had with Morgan.
Oh.
And so I'm wondering how this, like, kind of coalesced what I'm about to share with everybody. I know, I'm taking so long.
It's fine. We need the context.
You need the context.
Yeah.
Because this all makes sense. I mean, the actual thing doesn't make sense, but you can make the connections that it made sense to them.
Yeah.
Or that you can see what voids were being filled by each other's friendship.
Mm-hmm.
You can also kind of see that, like, you know, I wonder how much of, like, Anissa wanting Morgan's friendship and kind of, like, all of her attention kind of played into this whole, like, her being more comfortable with the idea that they were going to stab Peyton.
Yeah.
Because it would, you know,
be... Bring them, trauma bond them.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, at 12 years old, I wonder, I have to believe that at 12 years old, the actual consequence of killing somebody, that realization is not present for you before you do it.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
mm-hmm.
I
feel like maybe it just feels kind of like a game.
Like some very abstract thing.
Yeah.
Especially
if, like, they hadn't experienced death in a more real way outside of the stories that they were reading.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And they believed in Slender Man, which is, like, this very fantastical creature. And what they thought they were going to get out of it was, like, so beyond anything real. I have to believe that also their concept of somebody dying at their hands was also kind of unreal to them.
Mm-hmm.
But anywho, it's not to make any excuses. It's just trying to
understand.
Trying to understand what the fuck is going on here.
Yeah. Yeah.
So they looked at, I thought this was interesting. I don't know if interesting is the right word, but Anissa's Google Plus account shows YouTube videos that she liked and commented on, which was showcased in the documentary. It vacillates between cute animal videos and Are You a Psychopath videos, like self-assessment videos.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. So she was searching these things. And so...
Interesting.
All of this is on her iPad or whatever, mm-hmm, her computer. Mm-hmm. She would comment things like, poor baby, on the Blackfish. Remember the documentary Blackfish?
Was that about a whale?
It's about Sea World, yes, and like keeping killer whales, right, in captivity.
Yeah,
it's fucked up. Yeah, yep. So she'd say like poor baby, but she would also like, there was also documentation that she was laughing at dead baby jokes, and she like watched a mouse getting eaten by a snake, and like commented something about how she enjoyed the process of watching that. So it was interesting to. Hmm. Just kind of see how things kind of went back and forth on there. Like, this weird, like, investment and then suspension of empathy,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
documented in these comments for, mm-hmm, her. All the while, people said that they didn't notice some weird stuff with her. I'm not blaming, right, anybody.
Right.
I just think that we don't pay attention to children in the way that they need to be paid attention to. Like, you don't take any of their shit seriously.
Yeah, you just say, oh, they're just kids.
They're just being kids.
Yeah. So what does that even mean?
What does... That is so vague.
Yeah. It's, like, very, like, the non-gendered version of, like, boys being boys.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, but
remember
if someone...
Remember Gary.
Remember Gary? He was just boys being boys, and then he killed, like, 100 people.
Jesus.
So.
Woo.
But... Yeah, I feel like a lot of people just don't know how to respond in situations like that. So just kind of like put it to the side as like, oh, it's just their imagination. It's just kids being kids. They'll grow out of it.
Uh-huh. After Morgan and Anissa are bonding over Slender Man, they, mm-hmm, quickly devise a plan that takes 6 months to become Slender Man's proxies, which, as Akshi shared with you, is very complex, this process. So they believe that they need to kill somebody to become his proxy. They're also under the impression that Slender Man, if they don't do this for him, that he will murder their families. This is the reality that they're believing. There's a part where, like, the psychologist kind of pops back in and talks about, like, how Slender Man's the modern-day boogeyman and how he can morph depending on what scares you. They talk about how he captures a lot of pre-existing societal fears, and it's a draw to young people who might feel isolated or lonely or trying to find their way, which clearly was true for Anissa and Morgan. When you listen to them speak, you can tell they really reinforce this for each other, which we'll go into a lot more later. And I think Slender Man fulfilled, like, a desire for them to be a part of something bigger. Like, there's a lot of social scripts that you have to adhere to feel like you belong in the club, like, in school or whatever. And they didn't fit into that. But to fit in with Slender Man, all you need to do is, like, believe in him. And so they theorized that was part of the appeal.
Mm-hmm.
So, and yet another sign, there was a classmate that said Morgan told her that she has to kill a friend in order to become a proxy. And not to worry, because it's not her. What the fuck do you do with that information?
Don't worry, I'm not going to kill you.
Like, do you take that seriously?
Yeah. Because
I think if I heard that as a kid, I would be like, I think she's just being weird.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Because, again, I was a spooky-ass kid.
Yeah.
And so maybe somebody's just being weird.
Mm-hmm.
So Anissa says that Morgan told her, hey, Anissa, we should be proxies. We have to kill Bella, who is Peyton. Mm-hmm. This is how this was initiated. Morgan said that Slenderman has a mansion in the middle of Nicolet National Park, and that all they had to do was prove themselves that they are worthy of being proxies and living in this mansion with him. And according to court documents, Morgan told Anissa she recognized Slender, that as a young child she had seen him with her own eyes. And so Anissa really believed her when she said this. Like, when Anissa had brought this to Morgan's attention, Morgan was like, I've seen this guy. He's real. And so Anissa was like, shit. Okay. And then during this plan, they're very sneaky. They use code words on the bus rides to and from school to devise this plan, because they know that they can't just say, we gotta kill Bella. So they would use code words to replace, like, kill and stab. They replace words for weapons. They were very sneaky about this.
Wow.
I'm just, like, the amount of planning and intentionality that went into this is pretty wild. Like, they took time. And then Anissa said during her interviews that during a bus ride that she saw him, she saw a tall figure standing there with tendrils like a tree. I bet you she just saw a tree.
Yeah.
But to her, that was Slender Man, and that really confirmed for her that he was real. And so I think that's what solidified that for her, that she wanted to do this because she thought she saw him with her own eyes, and if she didn't do these things, that he would kill their whole families. When I was sitting here thinking about, like, connection and... or I guess lack of connection and what that does to a person, I think about this study that was done on mice and cocaine. And it was a study about addiction, but they proposed that, like, you know, people, they very broadly were like, people on the right say, like, it's a moral failing on the person who's using's part. And people on the left are more likely to say it's a disease and these people need help. And they said what the missing thing is there is that, they found that mice, in the absence of connection, were more likely to engage in abusing the cocaine. And so in this study, like, they provided cocaine to the mice, and all of them enjoyed the coke. All of them were, like, having a good time with the coke. But after a while, the mice built bonds with one another, and always the mouse that was left out, if there was ever a mouse that was left out, would always go to the cocaine.
Oh.
And just overuse the cocaine. And they did this with, like, the isolated mice too, by themselves. Mm-hmm. They did a bunch of different, like, versions.
Yeah,
of this.
I remember the study, because they also had, like, I think kind of like a park where it was like a mice park with all these activities.
Mm-hmm.
And then if the mice, like, had that, they were more likely to, like, engage in the activities rather than using the cocaine.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't know about this connection thing. That's very interesting.
Yeah. So I was thinking about this when I was, like, thinking about how they only had each other as friends, that they were, like, rejected in school, they were made fun of, that they felt lonely and isolated, and how Slender Man or Creepypasta or whatever, or this weird rush they get planning this murder, was, like, cocaine for them.
Mm.
You know? And again, I'm not dismissing their very intentional actions, but I am providing context as to what may produce really scary behavior like this. So anyways, this is where it all goes down.
Oh no.
Yes. So for Morgan's birthday, They plan a sleepover. I think they go bowling first. They have like some activities they do, and they plan a sleepover with Morgan, Anissa, and Peyton, aka Bella. And this is where they decide they want to kill her. It's pretty wild too, because there's like a pretty famous at this point picture of all three of them. Of Morgan looking kind of like disconnected there, and Anissa posing with a lollipop, and Peyton smiling in it. And this is the day before they try to do this.
Eerie. To her.
Yeah. So they devised three plans at the end of the day. They kept approaching it and then like not doing it, probably out of nervousness.
Right.
Understandably. So the first one was that they were going to kill her in the middle of the night, that they were going to set up an alarm to wake each other up. They were going to tape her mouth shut, and they were going to kill her there. Anissa and Morgan's plan was to murder Bella in her sleep, because they read that that was easier, to kill people when they're sleeping. But then...
Yikes.
Yes. But then they started getting sleepy, and, like, Morgan changes her mind, and she tells Anissa, she told the police that she wanted to give her best friend one more warning.
Mm.
Whatever that means. So they decide not to do it. And then in the morning, Morgan asks her mom if they can go to the park. Her mom says, of course. Usually her mom would be like, we need to come with you, but it was for her birthday. So she was like, go have fun. Go to the park. What happens in Waukesha, Wisconsin anyway? I'm going to come back to that, too, because,
little
wow.
Little do they know.
Jeez. But, yeah. So, Morgan packs a kitchen knife, and then they go to the park. They then discuss killing her in the park restroom. They said it would be better because there were drains there to drain the blood.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so, the new plan was to stab Bella in the bathroom, a.k.a. Peyton, prop her up on the toilet, lock the door, and run away. Anissa encouraged Bella to shut her eyes and go to sleep. It's a really weird thing to say to somebody. I wonder what was going on in Peyton's head.
I feel like she must have felt weird, off energy.
Probably. She was probably just, like, not listening to herself, brushing it off, being like, they're just a little weird. And that's why they, you know.
Being weird.
They're just being weird and, you know, they don't have any friends and I want to be friends. And probably something really earnest. Mm-hmm. So, when Bella didn't cooperate, Anissa smacked Bella's head against the bathroom wall, hoping to knock her out. And then there's, like, this kind of argument that happens between Morgan and Anissa. Morgan says, I thought we agreed that you were going to do this. And then Anissa's telling Morgan, like, you need to do this. You know where all the soft spots are. And, like, she, like, comforts Morgan and hugs and pets her.
Wow.
Neither of them wanted to be the one to do it.
Clearly.
Yeah. And then, okay, so after that, they couldn't go through with it. Anissa says we should take a walk, and this is where the stabbing happens. They say they're going to go play hide and seek. Anissa instructs Peyton to lie down, reassuring her that she would, or tells her to hide under the leaves. And then Peyton's like, no, I don't want to hide under the leaves. And this is where the, like, argument happens, where Anissa and Morgan are passing the knife back to each other,
mm-hmm.
back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
And like Anissa said, Morgan knows all the soft spots. I don't know what that means. I think they did a lot of research.
Yeah,
And then that's when she jumps on her and stabs her, like, 19 times.
Okay.
It's really sad because they report the story back and she keeps saying, like, I trusted you when she's being stabbed.
Oh, Peyton?
Peyton. Yeah.
I mean, nobody expects their friends to stab them.
No. Yeah. That's the thing. Like, I listened to some podcasts. They were like, why didn't she know they were being weird? Like, first of all,
she's 12.
And second of all, who thinks your friends are going to, like, fucking try to kill you?
Yeah.
That's unfair. That's unfair.
Yeah.
Podcast hosts.
Yeah. Let's not victim blame.
Let's not do that to a 12-year-old.
Yeah. Especially, you know, in groups of three like that, there's when you're 12, like, some one person feeling off is not abnormal. because, like, especially in a situation like that where it's like this new person has come in and now your friend is like closer to the new person than she is to you. So, like, I would read that off feeling as like, I just feel a little bit left out, you know, and I wouldn't read it as like, oh, this person's about to stab me.
Yeah, who thinks that? Especially because, like, Peyton and Morgan were best friends since they were fourth grade.
Yeah.
Like, what the heck? And this was, like, Morgan's birthday, you know?
Yeah.
She was probably telling herself that, too. She's probably putting up with way more than she normally would because it was for her birthday. Anyways, that part made me sad. So, after the stabbing happens, Anissa instructs Peyton to lie down, telling her that she'll lose blood slower that way. And they promised that they'd go get help, which they never did and didn't have any intention of doing that. They just didn't want her to move. They wanted her to die.
Yeah.
Yeah. So then they brought along two water bottles and pictures of their families with them, Anissa and Morgan, when they were venturing off to find Slenderman's mansion. Morgan begs Slender for help. And at this point, Anissa shares in her interviews that this is when she becomes disenchanted with the idea of Slenderman because he didn't do anything. That he never showed up. He never came to help them. And this is where they kind of split because Morgan is still very much convinced that he's a real thing. And then going back to Peyton, Peyton managed to make her way to a nearby road where a passing bicyclist found her. She was, like, covered in blood. I saw the fucking t-shirt, too. It's really haunting. She's wearing this, like, limited two kind of t-shirt.
Oh, man.
You know, it looks like some 12-year-old's t-shirt's covered in blood. Like, they really... She was really harmed.
Yeah.
So she finds the bicyclist. She's pleading for help. And then the 911 operator answered, and the way that they reported this is kind of funny. The 911 operator who received the biker's call was similarly shocked. In a thick Midwestern accent, he sputtered, "She appears to be what?" Because the bicyclist was like, "She appears to be stabbed." And, like, you can hear it in the 911 call. He, like, doesn't believe what he's hearing. He thought he asked him to repeat himself.
Right.
So... You can let go of your breath because she doesn't die. She survived.
Yay.
However, the doctor said that if she would have been stabbed a hair deeper, like a width of a hair deeper, one of her major arteries would have been hit and she would have died. Wow. So it really is a miracle that she's like...
I'm so glad she didn't die.
Me too. This would have been...
A way rougher story.
A rougher story. Especially like if that was her last like thing that she said.
Yeah. I trusted you.
I trusted you.
What the fuck?
And then another thing I wanted to note was, like, when I was looking at all of the 2020 interviews or whatever, all these people were like, what bad stuff happens in Waukesha, Wisconsin? How could these two innocent girls do something so horrible? The detective, Tom Casey, shares also he was in disbelief. He didn't believe at all that a 12-year-old stabbed another 12-year-old. He thought that people were exaggerating, that that didn't happen at all. Like, he had to be proved that happened. And so I was like, what is the history of Waukesha, Wisconsin? Cause they kept on like hammering over the head that this is such a safe place. It's such a safe place. And I guess it's true. Like, I looked up, apparently violent crime is extremely rare, at least reported violence is very rare.
Yes.
I have a hard time believing that domestic violence isn't present and rape isn't present because, hello, we live in America. But an average of less than one murder occurred per year between 2003 and 2016. The police were used to record, like, with calls like drunk dog walkers and, like, bats in desk drawers.
Okay. Wait, what was the second one?
Bats in desk drawers? Very specific.
Okay.
But apparently that was
strange.
Something
sure.
That
all right.
Happened. Yeah. Anyway. Basically what I'm hearing is that it's a white middle class neighborhood and it's safe for white people. And they couldn't believe that this was happening in their neighborhood.
Right.
Shock.
Yeah.
Shock and awe. Never mind that it was previously native land, that there were three tribes living there in the early 1800s, and some dude, we don't care about his name.
Some colonizer dude
came in there. He was like, nope, ours. And probably very violently removed them.
Yeah.
So, okay. Also, I thought it was interesting. They said that it was, like, the very first newspaper that was released there was an abolitionist newspaper.
Interesting.
It's super interesting because it's always been a very white place after they took that land away.
Hmm.
And it's still to this day is like nearly 80% white. There are virtually no black folks living there. So it just reminds me a lot of like people who are like, oh yeah, I'm liberal. I believe in equal rights, but not, I don't want to live by people that aren't like.
It's like that person from Little Fires Everywhere.
Oh my God. It is 100%. Like that.
Yeah.
It's like Shaker Heights.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes.
I forget what Reese Witherspoon's character is, but it's like that, where she's like, I marched with my mom in the protests with MLK.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right. She does. She, like, talks about the March on Washington, how great it was.
And then on the other hand, like, calls the cops on the first black lady she sees.
Yeah, basically. So, setting the stage here, just wanted to, I was like, what's the history here, Waukesha? Because people are just keep going over and over and over.
I'm in shock.
The shock and awe was real with them. Okay. Fast forward. The cops are on the hunt for these two girls. And honestly, they still, even though Peyton shared, my friend stabbed me, they don't believe that they stabbed her. They think that she...
What is with people also just, like, not believing children, you know?
Yeah, and then layered with the whole, like, I can't believe that two probably white tweens did this.
Yep.
Finally, they were walking for a really long time. I think they walked for, like, 5 miles until they encountered the police and then they turned themselves in. They, like, are walking in and they are, like, covered in blood. The police described them as calm and meek. I watched the interviews with both of them. You can see the split happen there, where Anissa is no longer invested in the Slender Man story and is like, I can't believe what we've done. And Morgan is still very much believing in his existence. So some things that... I noticed that, like, Morgan was checked out, had, like, flat affect. Some things that she said was, do you know what happened to the girl who was stabbed? I was just wondering. She said, when people trust you, they're gullible. When she was asked about the incident, she said, stabby, stab, stab. I didn't feel anything. It was, like, air.
Oh, man.
And then she said things like, are you trying to ask these questions over and over to see if I'll provide a different answer? I have the right not to go into detail if I don't want to. She said, I've thought of hurting people before, but they are mean to me, so they deserve it. When they asked if she felt bad, she said, I thought about it, but then remorse, I felt like remorse would get me nowhere. It's easier to live without regrets. So those are some quotes that stuck out to me. Anissa, on the other hand, looks visibly upset. She was recounting, like, the fears that she had about Slenderman, that he watches you, that he can read minds and has teleportation skills. She said, I thought that something would happen to my family if I didn't do it. And then she shared that she no longer believed in him because when they prayed to him, he didn't do anything. She also shared that, like, the good part of me wanted her to live and the bad part of me didn't. And so she's like, she's sifting through what's real, I think, in this moment. And then she starts getting visibly, like, upset. Morgan, on the other hand, clearly not present. She's, like, part of the time she's, like, kind of dancing in the room to herself. During this time, like, their parents weren't present during the interrogation.
What?
Apparently it's legal for them to do that. Their parents didn't even know it was happening. They thought that they were lost until they finally found out that they were there.
I feel like they're not even allowed to do that without a parent or lawyer, right?
Apparently in Wisconsin you can.
Oh my gosh.
And the detective was like, I find that people are more honest when they don't have other people in the room with them. I'm like,
these are kids.
Yeah, that's cool. Kind of,
yeah. They weren't offered a phone call either. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of like, what's up with that?
Yeah.
And then I don't remember which child's home experienced this, but one of the parents was like, they didn't go into this on the documentary, but I thought it was kind of weird. Like, they showed up in SWAT suits, the police did, at one of the parents' houses. The parents were like, what the fuck is happening? And I'm just like, you don't need a SWAT team to apprehend.
Especially if you already have the kid.
Honestly, I just was in my head. I was like, they were just super stoked that they got to put on these SWAT uniforms. That they've never used them before. They're like, violence never happens here. This is so exciting. Let's get to use these. We're going to bust in there. Like,
it's like at the end of the horror movie when all the police come.
They just wanted to be like that.
Yeah.
And they wanted to look cool in SWAT gear. Yeah. I just thought that was
definitely very unnecessary.
Super unnecessary.
Total waste of money and resources.
How expensive was that? Defund the fucking police.
It's probably very expensive.
Expensive as fuck. And in a place that unneeded. They claim to be so safe.
They were ready with their SWAT gear.
They were super ready with their SWAT gear.
Of how safe of a town it was.
Yes, for 12-year-olds. Anyway. These two were charged with attempted first-degree murder, with the potential to be jailed for 65 years. They were tried as adults.
Honestly, that doesn't... The whole trying people as adults thing makes zero sense to me.
No, they're children.
Like, even if they engage in an activity or a behavior that is, I guess, incongruent with children most of the time, they're still children.
Right.
And you should still be considering them at the developmental stage that they're at and not, like, they're 18.
Right.
18 is such a different developmental stage than 12. And 12 is also exactly around the same age that people go through puberty. And if they have something in their genetics that would make them more prone to getting some sort of mental illness, that would also be like a point where it might start showing up because of the developmental stage.
Mm-hmm.
So like that makes no sense to me that they would try these kids as adults. Because they're not adults.
Their mental faculties are not there.
Clearly.
Yeah.
Clearly.
Our brains are still baking.
They, for 6 months, prepared to kill their friend based on an internet urban legend. I don't understand. Anywho. I don't understand what went behind that process of choosing to try children as adults.
It probably has racist roots.
We'll look into it.
Let's look into it. If you have info on this, please share.
Yeah.
I just assume most things in this country have racist roots because they do. They surprise me every day. Oh, man. During this time, they're both incarcerated, and they're tried in adult court in 2017. So this is multiple years they're held in juvenile jail. During this time, Morgan is voluntarily taking antipsychotic medications. So after some assessments, they could tell Morgan... had some pretty clear signs of psychosis. And Morgan ended up being diagnosed with early onset schizophrenia, which is very rare. And Anissa was diagnosed with schizotypal personality disorder. The third diagnosis that both of them were given was shared psychosis, also called folie à deux. Folie à deux? My French is terrible. Don't come at me.
Folie à deux.
Folie à deux. So in December 2017, Anissa received a maximum 25 years in a mental health facility after pleading guilty to being an accomplice to second degree intentional homicide. And then in February 2018, Morgan received 40 years in a mental hospital after pleading guilty to attempted first degree intentional homicide.
Mm.
During the investigation, I guess between the time that they were jailed and the time that they were convicted, they did find that there was a lot more evidence that both of them were really obsessed in a concerning way with Slenderman. There was over 50 Slenderman drawings found in Morgan's room. They found mutilated dolls that had their hands cut off and legs cut off and, like, weird markings on them.
Oof.
And when they looked into their lockers, too, Morgan's locker was... had so many Slenderman drawings in the locker. Anissa's had one, but they also looked at the history in their browsers, mm-hmm. and you could see what they were looking at all the time, which was all surrounded in Slenderman shit.
Mm-hmm.
They found that Anissa created a fake email account to communicate about planning this murder.
Right.
And there were emails from Morgan saying, make sure that you clear your browser history.
Wow.
And they also found that they checked out books on the prison system, crime scene investigation, and, like, other murder shit from a library.
I mean, they had 6 months to prep.
Yeah. So they hid all of this from their friends and family. It's pretty outrageous.
Yeah.
The amount of things.
Yeah, it's kind of outrageous to me that people didn't notice that, you know, internet searches, sure, but, like, I don't know. If I was a librarian, 12-year-olds checking out stuff, I feel like I would definitely be like, what do you need this for?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I guess it's easy to kind of just, like, write it off when it...
I guess. I don't know. But they did interview the librarian, too, and she was like, I'm going to really think about what my role is here. Because I remember checking them out, I just didn't think much of it.
Right.
So I think that there was a lot of that. There was a lot of that from parents and stuff, like...
Mm-hmm.
A lot of these things were just kind of dismissed as things that kids do.
Yeah.
Which maybe, in some cases, would be that.
Yeah, which is true. In probably most cases.
Yeah. And also, it's just like, what's stopping anyone from having a conversation? Yeah. Though.
Instead of just, like, avoiding it completely. Like, just asking questions to, like, delve deeper into, like, what is your relationship with this character?
Mm-hmm.
Is your child understanding that this is, like, a fictional character?
Yeah. And also, like, even if it's not about the scary shit, would they have been as easily swept away if other needs were met? Right?
Mm.
Like, why did you not notice your children didn't have friends? Why wasn't it ever brought to your attention that your child is crying at school because she felt like she didn't belong, that people didn't like her, that she didn't fit in? They're all, like, there's all this, like, social exclusion, and, like, belonging is something that children fucking need so badly. Like, that's,
yeah.
Like, I mean, we all need it so badly, but I feel like, especially when you're just learning about yourself and relationships, like, that's something that, if not met, can be really detrimental.
Mm-hmm.
I also don't want to blame... I don't want to blame anyone for that, but also could we invest in having conversations with children that talk about maybe the roots of this?
Yeah.
There's also mental illness here.
But
we also know that schizophrenia is often not like this, doesn't manifest in this way. We know that often, like, people who are schizophrenic are not a threat to anybody.
Mm-hmm.
And if they are a threat to somebody, it's a threat to themselves because mm-hmm. they're experiencing a lot of things that aren't mm-hmm. really happening. At what point do those hallucinations get really dark? Probably coincides with when you're not feeling like people love you, that you belong.
Yeah. Yeah.
All these things.
Yeah.
Just saying.
There's a lot of contributing factors here, and we're not trying to blame anyone. I think we're trying to understand the moments in which there could have been interventions that could have prevented not only the harm to Bella, but also the harm that these two girls experienced themselves, even if they intentionally engaged in that behavior. Like, mm-hmm. it's a traumatic experience for both of them. And like we talked about earlier, they probably did not have an understanding of what stabbing their friend was actually going to be like until it was over.
Mm-hmm.
It seems to me like Morgan's kind of delusions got worse right after it happened, and mm-hmm. that she was, like, experiencing more symptoms of psychosis after it happened, and it seemed like Anissa was kind of dissociating right after it happened. So clearly they were also experiencing ways in which their, like, brain was trying to cope. And teachers are super overworked and under-resourced and are, like, asked to fill so many different roles for children that, you know, if they miss certain things, then it's also not really their fault. You know, we should be just funding education, funding mental health, funding so many things that would make situations like this less likely to happen.
Yeah.
Let's fund our community.
Let's address the conditions that propagate violence and shit. I just threw out a bunch of diagnoses at you, so I'm just going to go a little bit over what that means. And so, Anissa's diagnosis, schizotypal personality disorder, it's a mental disorder characterized by severe social anxiety, thought disorder, paranoid, ideation, derealization, transient psychosis, and unconventional beliefs. So what they did say was that it left her prone to being easily swept away by Morgan's very real hallucinations and paranoid thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
And also, like, schizophrenia shows up in a lot of different ways, too.
It's lots of different types.
Lots of different types. But for Morgan, there clearly has been, since she was very young, they found out later, hallucinations that she was experiencing.
Well, she was the one who had a lot of imaginary children.
Right.
Sorry, imaginary friends.
She had imaginary children.
I mean, they were, I'm guessing they were children. Maybe they weren't all children. But mm-hmm. she was the one who had a lot of imaginary friends when she was little. She believed in Santa until she was 11.
She did. Yeah. And then, yeah, they find out more after the investigation. So, like, I also did not mention yet. That her dad has schizophrenia. So it runs in their family. They never shared this with Morgan because they didn't think that it would be relevant yet, because schizophrenia, usually the onset's like your early 20s.
Yeah.
And early onset's so rare, they just dismissed her imagination as what they thought it was, imagination.
Wow.
But,
yeah, if people don't know, schizophrenia is a very genetically linked, more than other mental illnesses, is proven to be very strongly linked with genetics.
Yeah, so they knew it was a possibility, but they had just decided it wasn't time.
Right.
Her dad, when I'm watching the documentary and other interviews, you can just see him, like, he's, like, looking away from the camera and clearly just really haunted by the fact that his daughter did those things. And I'm sure he, like, blames himself for not seeing it sooner. He just, you see it in his face. It's really sad.
Yeah.
He was sharing, like, you know, my hallucinations are part of my reality, but I know that they're not there. I really, like, I've managed my schizophrenia. It's just part of, you know, how I live. And he shared that he is seeing things in that moment. He just knew that they weren't there. But he was also sharing, like, pretty benign hallucinations. So I wonder if managing it also helps with the what kind quality of hallucinations that you experience. So
I think even if you, like, were worried about your child potentially developing schizophrenia, I don't think that you would expect your child to stab someone as a result of that.
Right.
That, like you said, it's, like, really unlikely that people are going to be violent as a result of, like, psychotic symptoms.
Mm-hmm. They were shocked. I mean, still to this day, I think
they're probably,
like,
still
looking at interviews. Yeah. They're still, like,
I mean, it wasn't that long ago.
They're wrecked.
It's like 2 years ago that this person got the sentence, right?
That's true. Yeah. I guess the stabbing happened 2014, but
yeah,
she just got sentenced. So parents are having a rough time.
Yeah, our hearts go out to them.
Yeah, seriously, that's really rough. But also, you learn later when she talked to psychologists that Morgan actively hid her hallucinations from her parents because she didn't want them to go away. They were, quote-unquote, her friends.
Oh, she didn't want her hallucinations to go away?
No. And she said, I knew that if I told them that they would do something about it and my friends would go away. And so, again, I'm seeing, like, it was hard for her to make connections with real children, and so she leaned on the only ones that, you know, existed for her, which were in her hallucinations, which makes me kind of sad.
Yeah.
She recalls hallucinations as early as 3. She said that she saw ghosts. She said that they would bite her sometimes, like, out of play. And her mom learned about these symptoms while she was incarcerated. She said they never talked about it. So she kept it to herself this whole time. She just, like, really masked all the things she was experiencing since she was 3.
Wow.
She's, like, 12. It's, like, 9 years of hiding hallucinations.
Yeah.
So mostly her pretend world was non-threatening, but Then a man started following her in her hallucinations when she was a little bit older, I think maybe 9 or 10. When Morgan looked in the bathroom mirror, she said that she could see him behind her, this towering, shadowy thing, shifting in and out of corners. She said that she couldn't see his face, only that he was skinny, looming, and the color of smoke and ink. She named him It. She didn't name it after the book. She hadn't read the book.
Yeah,
but she didn't know what else to call it.
That's so scary.
She said that it stayed for a while, sneaking up on her in mirrors, but like the ghosts, it eventually went away on its own. But by the time that he finally left, she met Anissa, who confirmed to her that there are stories of Slender Man.
Oh my gosh.
Who sounded exactly like this scary figure that she had seen as a child in the mirror.
Wow. I just got chills.
Yeah. So that's like a really weird set of events that are unlikely and happened.
Yeah.
But when I read that, I was like, holy shit. All of these sources will be in our sources. So you can you can read them yourself.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of wanted to talk about shared psychotic disorder a little bit.
Folie à deux.
So from the Unpopular Culture podcast, there's this forensic psychologist who talks about crime and shit. He breaks it down for the listeners and says that there are three things that need to be happening at the same time. So two people share the same delusion or delusional system and support one another in this belief that they're unusually close in the relationship. They're codependent. And three, that the relationship has a member that's more active and there's one that's more passive. Mm. So temporal or contextual evidence exists that the delusion was introduced and reinforced by the active member to the passive partner. So Morgan being the active member, someone who's experiencing hallucinations and really, really believes that this is happening. And the passive partner, who would be Anissa, who was easily swept away and honestly just probably wanted to be accepted.
Yeah.
Which brings me to some thoughts about power of authority and also power of suggestion. There's a lot of, like, shared delusions that mirror the edges of, like, shared psychosis. We see this with, like, Trump conspiracy theorists, right? Like, your next-door neighbor, your quote-unquote normal person taking cues from someone who's a person of authority and behaving pretty drastically in their name. Like, we see that with, like, any group that gets radicalized, honestly, like,
yeah,
if you read, like, radicalization threads for the KKK, for ISIS also, they have the same language. There's, like, one person who just is curious, doesn't really belong in their community, and then, like, an active person tells them that we're going to accept you no matter what, but you also need to buy into all of these things that we say are true. And then they do some scary-ass shit.
And I'm just, I'm also just thinking about incels.
Incels!
And how the internet really is, like, a space for people to feed into each other's delusions and, like, radicalize each other much faster than it would happen not on the internet.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
And I want to caveat that when I talked about Trump, quote-unquote, normal people, I'm not suggesting that racists emerged out of the Trump presidency. I am suggesting that people who had more latent beliefs were exceptionally activated by this person in authority who told them all of their beliefs are valid and convinced them that all news is fake, that there's all these conspiracy theories that are trying to take him down, freaking QAnon. What the fuck is that?
Yep.
Also, all those people who insist Sandy Hook never happened.
That the Holocaust never happened.
Or that the Holocaust never happened. All of these are shared delusions that are perpetrated by adults.
Yep.
So I'm hoping that makes it a little easier for you to consider that maybe children are more suggestible.
Of course.
You know? Not you, but, like, you, as in, I'm pointing to the microphone as if you, like, are you all in here. But, yeah, and
I'm sure that every single person who's listening can think of a time where someone told them about something and, you know, it definitely seemed fake, but there was like kind of a pull mm-hmm. to make it real. Mm-hmm. Like I can definitely think of a lot of instances for myself like that. So
for sure. Yeah. When I was a child, me and my friends convinced ourselves that there was this magic tree. Well, I don't know why. And it's a pretty benign belief. So why not? Why not believe in a magic tree? Why not believe in a little magic? The world sucks. So we'll believe in this magic tree.
Yeah. I'm remembering how in elementary school, my friend and I, we thought that the high schoolers' gym was haunted, and we would like walk near it, and whenever we would see the punching bag moving, we'd be like, see, it's a ghost, even though gravity, wind, definitely a thing. But we decided the high school gym was haunted because a punching bag was moving.
You know, confirmation bias.
Yep. And we liked creepy shit, so we were trying to walk around searching for creepy shit.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. I also...
Your brain's always trying to make connections like that, especially when you're a kid, so...
Extra when you're a kid.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember... Oh, this is kind of funny, but I remember when I was a kid, I had this fish that I called Rainbow because I was like, it always changes colors. Must be a magic fish. You know what was actually happening?
What?
The fish fucking died. They kept replacing the fish so it was a different color.
Oh my god!
So my brain was like, my brain was like, makes more sense that the fish is changing colors than maybe the fish died and is being replaced.
Right, right.
It didn't occur to me until I was like a teen when I was reflecting back on that story. Because that was just a belief that I held on to.
Right.
I took as fact because it was a story I told myself as a kid.
Yep.
When I was reflecting on it, in the middle of telling myself the story, oh, remember that fish? I was like, holy shit, Shayna. That fish was not a rainbow fish. That fish kept dying, and they didn't want me to know that the fish kept dying.
Oh, man.
But it was a little magic for me. Anyway.
Yeah.
Back to the story. All of these things are ripe conditions for shared psychosis. They also said that, like, thing that sustains shared psychosis is contact with one another. And that usually the passive person pretty immediately comes to and is like, this is no longer my belief. Mm-hmm. Which is what happened to Anissa when she was like, Slender Man never responded to our prayers.
Right.
On the Unpopular Culture podcast, the psychologist talks about how they are in incarceration. And when I'm hearing about it, it sounds like they're only getting worse. Anissa, worse on the emotional well-being. And for Morgan, it seems like her internal world is more active. She's less in touch with what's happening, which makes sense because... If you're in a state where your body's protecting yourself from reality, you're going to, like, you know...
Go inwards.
Retreat into another place.
Yep.
If you can.
Yep.
He says that Anissa shows no signs of psychotic break, that her thought pattern is linear. Anissa also doesn't show signs of antisocial behavior, but Morgan does start to do that.
Which one of them was searching things like, am I a psychopath?
Anissa.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Interesting.
But I don't think Morgan had the self-reflection that she was a psychopath.
Right, right. It's like the thing where they say, like, if you think that you're a narcissist, you're not one.
Yeah. And when you were talking about proxies, mm-hmm. Part of it being that they were taken over by Slenderman's, like, consciousness, basically.
Right.
It would make sense that she was trying to track whether or not that was happening to her.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So after you shared that, I was making that connection.
Right. Okay. That makes sense.
So, but Anissa in incarceration, she showed the opposite of antisocial. She was hungry for approval. She just wanted to fit in, which I think were issues far before incarceration, but they're really magnified in this setting where she's feeling isolated. They're also in a situation where they can't talk to or touch their parents, like when they visit, aww. there's no touch or anything allowed. Just isolation.
And I mean, we've all been isolating a lot the past 7 months. So we know what people not touching us can do, even if we're not even the good type of people who like that.
That's true. True. Can attest to that. Yeah. So she becomes depressed and suicidal and reclusive when she's incarcerated. She's like a tween.
Yeah.
Yeah. Morgan's symptoms are extra pronounced. During this time, she's increasingly emotionally detached and she's submersed in her internal world. She's less interested in engaging with anything outside her internal reality. They also say that she has signs of oppositional defiant disorder. It's noted as a condition in which a child displays an ongoing pattern of angry or irritable mood, defiant or argumentative behavior, and vindictiveness towards people in authority. I know from whatever past reading in my brain that ODD is often accompanies being really traumatized as a child.
Yeah.
And it comes out, I feel like it's less of a disorder and more of an adaptation to, like, whatever that child is experiencing.
Mm-hmm.
But also, I have read that ODD, if gone unchecked and unhealed, can develop into antisocial personality disorder, which a lot of serial killers have. And definitely, when we're talking about serial killers, they're like, what was their childhood like? It looks like they have ODD.
Right.
And it was not checked.
Right.
That being said, hashtag not everybody with ODD, okay?
Yeah.
I'm not saying everyone's going to become a serial killer. I am saying that we need to check on kids and address things.
Yeah.
So Morgan still says, it's weird. I still feel no remorse. I still have this feeling that it was necessary to do what I did. Her dad, this is really sad, actually, when I see her dad say this, but when her dad suggested Slender Man wasn't real to her, she reacted really viscerally and, like, shunned him. She, like, didn't want to see him anymore. Yeah. And so he's, but like...
That is also a thing that happens when you invalidate people's hallucinations and delusions.
Yeah.
Oh, that sucks.
That does suck? Fuck.
Yeah.
Yeah. There was also this story which was, like, confirming the antisocial behavior was, like, she had these pet ants, and she was always tending to them and talking to them, but after she was transferred to a mental health institution, she threw those same ants that she was taking care of at children in the facility, which is troublesome. I'm just, like, you know, and she wasn't engaging in this behavior before all of this went down, right? Like, there may be glimmers of this. It just seems like she's getting a lot worse in being incarcerated. The guy on the Unpopular Culture podcast continues to say that, like, when he reads online, he sees people asking for harsher punishment for the girls, like, saying really, like, ugly things about these children. And he was, like, wanted to clear up that a forensic hospital is very much a prison.
Yep.
That patients are accounted for every 15 minutes of every day, that calls are restricted to the most well-behaved, whatever that means. I wonder...
Taking your meds, probably.
Mm-hmm.
Going to therapy.
Yeah.
Following all the rules.
Mm-hmm. I also wonder how, like, race plays into how you perceive well-behaved, because we know that mm-hmm. there's a disparity there.
I mean, I think that in the same situation, if Morgan and Anissa had been children of color, they probably would have been placed in juvenile detention and not in a forensic hospital.
Yeah. Yeah. Or worse. I mean, but I'm pretty sure that I've seen instances of children being incarcerated in adult jails.
Yes.
Okay, just jumping in with a brief interruption. I did some Googling after this recording to make sure that we weren't misspeaking on whether or not children were incarcerated in adult prisons, or we were just remembering that wrong in our heads. And the Equal Justice Initiative, which I will link in our sources, states that we most definitely have a history of incarcerating children in adult prisons, that it's very disparate in race, and
obviously the way that the sentencing is ushered out is a case-by-case basis. They state at the top of their website that until recently, legal protections that recognize children are different from adults, that they're more vulnerable, emotional, and impulsive, that they can't get themselves out of unsafe homes or communities, didn't apply to children accused of committing violent crimes. Children were executed in the U.S. until 2005, and only in the last decade has the Supreme Court limited death in prison sentences for children. Kids as young as 8 can be still charged as an adult, held in adult jail, and sentenced to extreme sentences in adult prison. If you'd like to learn more about this, I would recommend checking the Equal Justice Initiative out. They are a nonprofit organization who works with communities that have been marginalized by poverty and discouraged by unequal treatment. They also provide research and recommendations to assist advocates and policymakers in the critical, important work of criminal justice reform. Specifically on the topic of incarcerating children, I will also include the report that they did on children in adult prison, more specifically their report called Cruel and Unusual, Sentencing 13 and 14-Year-Old Children to Die in Prison. They began investigating how many children had actually been sentenced to die in prison through life imprisonment without parole sentences. So this is a study of 73 cases nationwide. All right, well, with that, back to the episode.
But yeah, and then during supervised visitation, there's no touch. There's no ease of reintegration from that experience either, just like prison doesn't offer an ease of reintegration from that experience.
There's this thing called, like, revolving door syndrome, where people just, like, keep going in and out of either prisons or mental health facilities. And it's because being in prisons and mental health facilities doesn't prepare you to, like, reintegrate into, it doesn't teach you how to do that.
No.
And if you are spending decades of your time in institutions like that, one, it's going to mess with your head and make you worse because you're so socially isolated. And then two, like, it's nothing like what it's like living outside of those facilities.
Mm-hmm.
So some people even want to go back because it's like something that they know how to do versus they don't know how to live in like the outside world anymore.
Right. Yeah.
I've heard a lot of people who are struggling with substance use disorder will want to go back to jail or want to go back to prison because that's the only place where they have access to like a therapist
mm-hmm.
or like mm-hmm. a support group.
That's gross.
Yeah.
That's gross.
Like, can we fund community mental health?
Right.
Like, there aren't any options in the current moment for, like, girls like them outside of, like, a forensic hospital. Like, honestly, that is the best case scenario in the systems that currently exist, that mm-hmm. they were placed in a forensic hospital and not in a juvenile detention center.
Right.
But there need to be.
Those are alternatives. Shitty options.
There are definitely prisons and like mental health institutions in other countries where like your family members can stay with you and things like that. And people tend to fare better when that's happening because they have social support. And right. social support is so important to everyone. Some places it's like the institution itself is kind of like a commune. And so they have all these different, they have like these shops and these like restaurants and you can like choose what job you want to have like within this commune of an institution. That does translate well into like something that you can do once you're not in that institution anymore.
Right. Like you can't rob people of their autonomy and then get mad at them for not being independent.
Yeah. Like I have realized myself like how much my brain has changed over the past like 6-7 months of, like, living such a different life than I normally do because of the quarantine.
Mm-hmm.
So you can imagine what, like, decades of, like, you know, living in incarceration can do to someone's brain. Oh, man.
Over it. But anyways, truly the only difference between prison and forensic hospitals is the presence of social workers and therapists.
Or, like, greater presence of social workers and therapists.
Greater presence and then maybe medication. Mm-hmm. I mean, this guy says the only difference is that there's no intent or infrastructure for any rehabilitation, which are people who enter forensic hospitals rehabilitated to enter into everyday life? Or are they there forever? Mm-hmm. Question.
Or is it like they come in and out?
Or they come in and out. Okay, my last point, as I'm talking forever.
So many tangents.
My last point is that the entire time I've been thinking about how children of color are treated so differently in our carceral systems, I thought about Breisha Meadows, who killed her father. She was like 14, but she had gone to so many adults asking for help, and nobody helped her. And she felt that the only way that her father wasn't going to kill their whole family was to kill him. And she was incarcerated for it when she needed help earlier, and she just needed fucking care. I'm also thinking of Santoya Brown, who, like, killed the, honestly, child predator. They keep calling him, like, a John.
The person who trafficked her, right?
No, she killed the person who was buying sex from
her. Oh, okay.
But she felt unsafe with him.
No shit.
He was, like, in his 40s. She's 16 years old. He did something, and she killed him, and she was incarcerated for a long fucking time. People had to organize for clemency.
Yeah.
I'm thinking and about...
that only recently happened.
Recent. And, like, how long was she in prison for? She's a fucking adult now. I'm thinking about migrant children at the border who don't speak English and have to represent themselves in court.
Like four-year-olds.
I was just thinking about all these stories in which we just, like, really fuck with children of color. And, like, when they're faced with, like, real life horror of violence, we expect them to navigate like well-adjusted adults, and when they don't, they're punished for it. And it just is like made me really mad. I was sitting here like, all of this is so, it's just drenched in fuckery. But also, for example, Khalif Browder was thrown into Rikers Island at 16 for 3.5 years, two of those in solitary confinement for allegedly stealing a backpack. He did not steal a backpack. He was innocent. He ultimately took his own life after years of trauma and abuse that was created by our fucking criminal justice system. So my point being that our systems are fucked.
Yeah, when the best case scenario is that you're put in, like, a forensic mental hospital because of, like, a lot of overlapping factors, and that is the best case scenario, like, yeah, our system's fucked.
Systems
we need alternatives.
So many things are happening at the same time here. Mm-hmm. Well, that's all I have. That was a lot.
Yeah, that was a lot. Just like it was a lot last time with Gary. Every episode, that was a lot.
That was a lot, yeah. Is there another way we can end this?
I mean, if you're curious about the Slender Man mythology, there is tons of content on the internet that you can look into, and creepypastas in general are a very entertaining way to escape from the horrors of reality into the horrors of
not reality,
unreality.
But don't go try to kill someone.
Yeah, please don't.
After it. Okay? No. It's not real.
Creepypasta. Copy pasta. It's an internet meme, internet, urban legend. Not real.
Not?
People being creative, writing stories. That's what it is.
Yeah. Moral of the story, check on kids.
Check on kids.
See how they're doing.
Yeah.
What's going on with them?
Have conversations with kids.
What do they enjoy? Is it weird? How weird?
Do they have friends?
Are they being bullied? Are they telling you about it? Are they hiding shit from you? Do they think they can talk to you about stuff?
Yeah.
All worthy questions.
And with that, perhaps we should stop talking.
I'm hungry.
I'm hungry too. So
just gonna end this way every time.
Yep. We're gonna go. Bye, friends.
Goodbye. Thanks for listening.
Yeah. And rate and review us. on Apple.
On Apple Podcasts. Yes. Follow us on Instagram at Unpacking the Eerie and on Facebook, facebook.com/ Unpacking the Eerie. Tell your friends who like creepy shit and social justice. Thanks.
See you in the next one.
Goodbye.
Bye-bye.